Thanks for downloading this podcast from RNIB Connect Radio.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Welcome to Tech Talk from RNIB Connect Radio, the RNIB's technology show for blind and partially sighted people. See technology differently.
Oh, hello, welcome to another hour of Tech Talk with me, Stephen Scott. Just me this week with you. Yep, Robin, Tim and Andy all have the week off this week because we are focusing in on gaming this week. Yes, visually impaired gaming, a topic which we have touched on before, but we're coming back to for a special hour this week. Now, why? Well, that's because RNIB recently launched the Gaming for Everyone campaign, aimed at encouraging game developers to make their games more accessible to more blind and partially sighted people, and actually the wider disabled community as well. We're going to find out all about that, give you the details on how you can find out about Gaming for Everyone. If you're a streamer, if you're on Twitch, or perhaps you just enjoy sitting on the Discord servers listening to other people talk about gaming, well, you might want to know about the Gaming for Everyone campaign. But don't worry, if you're not into gaming, stick around, still lots for you. We are going to be touching on the E3 technology event that happened. That's, of course, the big gaming expo that happens every year. What accessible news came out of that? We'll be hearing from two prominent visually impaired gamers, and we'll be hearing from Courtney Craven and Steve Saylor a bit later. And we'll also be finding out from our Technology for Life team all about accessible TVs. What TVs out there are accessible to us as blind and partially sighted people? We're going to be checking in with Joanne Wilson from the Technology for Life team and giving you the details on how you can get in touch with the Technology for Life team to get your tech questions answered. All that coming up on this, our special episode of Tech Talk this week. So yeah, doing things a bit differently this week, of course, as Tim and Robin are away on a well-deserved break. Andy also giving him a well-deserved break as well. We will get back to your emails next week. Keep them coming. We do love getting your emails, so keep them coming to techtalk@rnib.org.uk. But this week I thought I'd get together a bunch of visually impaired gamers to talk about their passion for gaming and why they do it. It's all part of Gaming for RNIB. Whether you're on Twitch or you're on YouTube or Facebook streaming, you can help RNIB's gaming community and drive fundraising for RNIB as well as raise awareness of the challenges of gaming as well. That's the world we want to create, a world without barriers, right? So for that reason, it's important people understand what those barriers are. So for that, we turn over to the first of our guests on the show this week. If you'd like to introduce yourselves.
My name's Lynette. I'm from Market Hill in County Armagh. I'm here because I'm part of the VI Gaming Group. We meet every Thursday between 4 and 5 o'clock, and we just be discussing issues of problems that people have with visual impairments, trying to play games and maybe what games are accessible and what games aren't. And I'm also here because, well, I have an audit problem. So I am here out of one ear. So I am here in mono. So finding audio games and stuff that's a wee bit more challenging for myself, Stephen.
Very interesting. Okay, thank you, Lynette. Let's bring in Abby. Abby, tell us about yourself.
Yeah, hello. I'm Abby. I do the Redders and Jeffers Gaming podcast with Kim, and we talk about the accessibility for games and which parts we find good and which parts we don't.
And Kim, you are part of that podcast as well. Tell us about yourself.
Hi, I'm Kim. I'm from Wolverhampton. I started doing the podcast with Abby around July last year. And we've basically built up a community of like-minded friends who are also VI gamers. So we like to play in a group and kind of discuss what we find accessible about games, what we don't. And we just, have a good time.
Okay, so let's get into this conversation then, because I think a lot of our listeners are intrigued, as I am, into how visually impaired people play games. And I say that as a visually impaired person myself, guys, okay? Because I don't play that many games. So your job here today is to convince me that gaming is something I should be doing. Because I genuinely took the view for a long time that gaming just wasn't going to be accessible to me. And I know that's changing, which is good. So let's get into why that is changing and what's changing about it. Of course, Lynette, where I want to start with you is around, you mentioned the accessibility side from your own point of view, not just visual issues, but hearing issues as well. So there's a lot of challenges there. What got you into gaming?
Well, by the way, I'd like to say I'm part of the Northern Ireland Scotland group. So I'm the VA group that meets on the Thursday. So, but I think I lost my sight when I was around about 19, and before that I would have been playing all those games like the Spectrum games, you know, where you had, like Paperboy and all that there. And then before I lost my sight, I would have been playing like a Sonic the Hedgehog and Echo the Dolphin and what have you. And then after I lost my sight, I would have tried playing a lot of the audio games, you know, like the Grizzly Gulch and, I don't know, the Jim Kitchen, the games at a time. So you had golf and things like that there. And I enjoyed some of them, but I found a lot of them very, very lacking. So I did, you know. But then after a few years later, then I lost the hearing in my right ear, which basically means that I only hear in mono. So trying to find games that are suitable for the likes of myself is very, very difficult, because a lot of the games are in stereo. And so they are the visually impaired games. So they're really not accessible for me at all at this stage. And as for like any mainstream games, well, they have put some audio cues and stuff in, but they're still no good for the likes of myself, because, you know, I'm not going to know if the audio cue is coming from the right or coming from the left or what have you.
Well, this is the challenge with accessibility, isn't it? That oftentimes it's built for, you know, you get features built into games, especially in gaming as we're talking about here, you know, that suit visually impaired people and perhaps suit deaf people or perhaps suit people with motor difficulties. But when you start crossing the streams, as it were, there are some challenges with that.
Well, there definitely is. There's definitely some challenges all right there. So I'm kind of hoping that perhaps with, you know, making this whole thing with this global campaign thing from the RNIB and what have you, that will perhaps encourage some of the big game developers to think about these issues that we're all having, and perhaps maybe with the likes of haptic feedback and audio cues that the likes of myself will be able to play and join in.
Okay, let's bring in Abby and Kim at this point, because I'd be keen to know your views on all of this. Abby, let me start with you. How did you get into gaming, and do you relate with what you're hearing from Lynette?
So I got into gaming from quite a young age, from my mum just buying me a Game Boy and DS, and it was never kind of questioned upon as much on if it was like impossible for me to do. So I kind of learnt to adapt to be able to play the games that I was playing. And although I don't have the problem of the sound, I do relate to what Lynette is saying.
Kim, what about you? Tell us your journey into gaming as a visually impaired person.
Well, I have a younger brother. He's 4 years younger than me, and he's fully sighted. So it was never something I thought about. It was just we played games together. He'd always moan at me because I had my head right in front of the TV and he couldn't see anything, and he said I was cheating because, you know, I was blocking his view. But that's the thing, it was just natural. It's something I've grown up with. I think, you know, me and Abu, we're in the right generation. I don't know how old are you guys with that, but so it's just normal, and that's always how I've seen it. So when people say that they feel excluded and they've never tried games because, you know, they just don't know where to start, it just makes me feel really sad, because Sometimes you don't stop and think that other people aren't able to enjoy the things that you're enjoying right now.
Yeah, and obviously the campaign by RNIB is all about promoting the inaccessibility of games, but also promoting the fact that blind and partially sighted people do play games, and that's really important to get that point out there, isn't it, to say that it's possible. So, Kim, if I start with you then, give me a game that I could maybe start looking at today as somebody who's never really been into games but is kind of curious about it. Where should I start? What could I be playing today on what platform that might be of interest, that might be easy to get into?
Oh, that's a big question. It depends on what kind of things you like. I mean, do you like puzzle games? Are you more into stories?
Do you know what I love doing, but I know this is impossible. Well, it's not impossible, but it's a challenge, is driving games. That's what I love doing.
There are some good driving games out there.
Okay.
In the podcast, we were talking about Mario Kart, which actually has a feature that keeps you on the track. So I've had friends who were like totally blind and friends who have a bit more vision playing it. And because of this feature that always keeps you going forward, if you can't really see the track, you just hold the button down and keep going and throw out the items, and then you'll find that you're like knocking your friends off a cliff and they're upset. And you know, you can just join in and have fun like everyone else. So it's and it's really lighthearted, you know, it's easy to get into. You don't have 100 different settings to try and sort out at the beginning. It's really friendly, beginner-friendly game.
Oh, can I butt in?
Yeah.
There's a really good one, so there is on the Apple devices at the moment, the iOS devices. It's called Blind Drive. Now, it's not accessible for me, but I certainly have downloaded it and tried it. So I think it costs about $3.99 or something on the App Store. And you're handcuffed and put into this car. And you get this telephone call from this guy, and you have a blindfold on, and he starts the car driving, so he does. And the things like coming at you, like you have to stay on the track, and you'll hear the cars coming from the left and the right. You see, well, and you have to avoid the cars. There'll be cyclists and cats maybe there. I'm not sure if you get bonus points for knocking them down or what. So I'm not. but you know, there's like that's one particular, you know, round, and then maybe there'll be another one where there'll be really, really heavy rain, you know, and you'll be hearing the rain hitting off the windscreen, and you know, you're having to navigate through the traffic. Or there's another round where your guy, I don't know how he controls this car, but must be like one of these automated cars, and he turns the radio up full blast, and you're trying to navigate around the track, so you know, around the circuit. So yeah, it's very, very good, and I have to say, I recommend that.
Yeah, and you know, what's great about that game is, from my understanding, is it's a mainstream game, right? It's not a game that was built for
Correct.
Blind people. You are alluding, of course, to the problem that it is a stereo game, and that's the whole point of it. You need to have that stereo ability to listen to that, which would be a challenge for you. But you're right. I mean, it is a great game. It also gives sighted people, I guess, a chance to, you know, have a go at playing a game without visuals, and we're seeing more and more of that. Abby, what's your take on all of this? What's your suggestions for gaming, starting out gaming?
So as Kim said, it does depend what you're into, and just like sighted people, there's so many genres that you could be into. And obviously every blind person isn't into the same genre. And I would also back up Kim as well, with Mario Kart having that thing of keeping you on the track. But also it's like really colourful, so it's quite easy to distinguish things on it, which I find quite helpful.
Abby, you pick up on a very interesting point. We don't all like the same things. I mean, this is not a surprise to us, but it seems to be a surprise to a lot of people. And I equate it a little bit with audio description. When I go into a category, if I can find one on an on-demand platform for audio description, everything's usually bunched together. And I often think, yeah, but what if I want to section this out by thrillers or dramas or sci-fi. You know, I can't do that easily. It's just a case of here's your bucket of content. Go find what you maybe like in it. So it's like raiding through the bargain bin to find something you want. And that seems to be a problem for us because we're often... It feels in some ways as if society is just giving us stuff and we should be appreciative about it and we should just get on with it. And actually, that's not the case, is it? And that's the whole point of the RNIB campaign, is that, you know, we're trying to say to gaming companies, you've got to make your games accessible, because why would you not want a slice of our market and a slice of our cash as well, I imagine?
Yeah, I feel like I've given Nintendo my soul at this point. I've so many games and... One thing I've said quite a bit, I've joked about, is if I'm going to get a lesser experience than someone who's sighted because I haven't made it accessible, why am I paying full price? And I feel like, as a minimum, if you pay for something full price, you should expect the full experience. And, you know, in some games, I'm not getting that. And I feel like, as a consumer, I should be getting that.
Lynette, do you agree with that?
Yeah, well, why wouldn't you? Indeed, what do you call it? If you're not getting the full experience, why should be paying the price?
But there is a problem though, isn't there? That we are kind of given the crumbs, if you like, in some occasions. Not all the time, but it does feel sometimes. I certainly feel this. You tell me if you agree. But I sometimes feel that we're just kind of thrown these crumbs by some games companies, other companies as well, who provide services, who say, you know, yeah, we've made this a little bit accessible, so you know, here you go. And it's interesting, you know, when you talk about playing games, or I mean, I always go back to TV because it's the most relevant thing I can talk about. You know, you get, for example, some particular device which has got a screen reader built in, and you get the screen reader and you think, oh, this is great, it's all accessible. But then you go to an app and it's not accessible because the app doesn't read, or... And it's just like, oh, come on, really? So it goes back to that point that Kim's making, that, you know, you're sometimes given a lesser experience. Why should you pay full price? I find that an interesting
Well, I suppose this is why we're doing this campaign at the moment, is to try and change this. You keep talking about television there, Stephen. And like only for, I suppose, the campaigning that's been done over the years to get audio description. I suppose, we wouldn't have it. So perhaps if we do this for the game, and hopefully maybe we'll see more games and get a bit of a choice.
Interestingly, the whole, and I keep going back to this because it's the only thing I can really relate to.
I
here.
Know.
But what I find interesting is that the way that audio description came to be so popular and came to be so available on UK TV was because of legislation. So... what do we all think about that? Should there be a law? Is there something in the statute books? I don't know if there is, that would say these products have to be accessible by law, because we know that once it's law, things change. Or is that maybe going too far, Abby? Do we want more of a conversation with the gaming community and the gaming companies? Or do you think we need to actually, as you would say, the carrot or the stick approach? What do you prefer?
I think... it would be nice to not have to put a law in and kind of them doing it from their own kind of terms. But then at the same time, some people may not want to, like some people may not go forward with doing it in their own terms, and law may be necessary.
Kim, do you have a view on that?
I think it's difficult because accessibility is such a complicated thing. And when it comes to games, they are primarily a visual thing. And there's some games where it would compromise the whole idea of it to try and like change certain things, but then others are like they're ready to be made accessible. So it's just so hard. You can't kind of shove everything in the same category. So I think any lawmaker would have a difficult time like wording it right. But I think a lot of it just comes down to like gradual change, like. If you see the difference with audiobooks now, for example, you know, you said about like going through a bargain bin, that used to be what getting an audiobook was like. You know, you had to go to the back of the shop. There was maybe a shelf, like a really dusty shelf at the back with like five different audiobooks priced like, you know, triple the cost of a regular book. But now you've got lots of services and it's gone mainstream and reading's more accessible than it's ever been. And I think we will get to that point with games, but it's got to be something that comes about naturally over time, and because just pushing it now, like, too hard probably will send developers in the other direction.
Lynette, I want to ask you about the social side of gaming, because you've talked about the group that you're involved in Northern Ireland, and there are groups in Scotland now, and I believe other groups are starting to pop up, some with RNIB support, some have been organic themselves. These are gaming groups that people join up, play games, talk about games. You know, you can tell me what happens in these groups, but why are they so important, do you think?
Well, I think they're so important. We actually have a Discord server, so you know, so that we can all meet up and chat with all, you know.
Can I sound like a really old man here, Lynette? What is a Discord server? What is that?
It's a platform. So it is, I suppose, like I'm sure you heard of Ventrilo or TeamSpeak or TeamTalk or some of those things. So it is. It's just a gamers platform, just for chatting. Whenever you're playing games and stuff, you can interact with each other. So you can, Stephen. So we've set one up, and we hold like community nights on ours, where there's me and another lady gamer there. We would there's a game on the Alexa speaker called Puzzler.
Oh, and so, do you talk about the games? Do you play the games?
Yeah,
how does it work?
Play them. We're actually going to be playing that game, so we are. And some of the guys and people that want to get involved or join us in a chat room, more or less, to the do. And we'll actually I subscribe to the game Puzzler, and it's like crossword, Stephen. And
okay.
The Alexa speaker, she'll be reading out the crossword, and there's a bit of music playing, you know, to give us a bit of time to scratch her brains to think what it was, you know, what the answer is.
Okay.
So it is.
Sounds good.
So,
that sounds good fun.
It is good fun, Stephen. And the other thing too is, you know, forgetting about them community nights, you know, you find a lot of the guys that are maybe a wee bit more, got a wee bit more sight than the like of myself, they're playing on their PlayStations and their Xboxes, and they're chatting back and forth and what have you to each other, you know, by text.
Mm, yeah, okay. That's very interesting. And Abby, what about you? What's the sort of social side for you? Do you get a lot out of that?
Yeah, definitely. So with, particularly with lockdown, we formed kind of a little like group between us, through doing our gaming, and we have a Discord as well, but we tend to just use Facebook Messenger and just ring on there and chat on there and play with each other on there, which is how me and Kim kind of got more talking as well. Yeah,
that's interesting, isn't it? I mean, you've mentioned, Lynette, the Discord server, which is one way of doing it. You're using Facebook Messenger. I mean, really, it's a way of you getting together in a group, so you could use a number of different apps, WhatsApp or Facebook or whatever you wanted, really, right? I mean, that the point is you're just finding a platform to use to talk to each other while you're all playing your games on the respective platforms you're using. I guess that's the technology behind it. But in terms of the what it does for you, in terms of giving you that social contact, that sounds really important. And of course, Abby and Kim, you both do the podcast as well. Kim, tell us about the podcast and what people could hear from that.
So we started it last July, and it was a joke to begin with. I didn't think Abby would take it seriously.
Okay.
And then I was like, okay, I guess we're doing it then. But it's been more of, I'd say it's been a tool to help us connect with others, because on each episode, we try and get a different guest or guests on it that some of them, like, I've never met or Abby's never met, or in the case of our fourth episode, we hadn't met any of the guests. You know, we just jumped into a call with random people off Facebook. So it's just been really fun to hear lots of different people's perspectives and talk about some of our favourite games and rant about other games. And yeah, it's quite casual. It's really fun.
Sounds great. And where can people get the podcast? What's it called?
It's called Redders and Jeffers. We've got it available pretty much everywhere, like Apple Podcasts and Spotify and stuff. And yeah, we've got our kind of second set of episodes coming out soon, because we did some up until September, and then we've got a couple more that are coming out in the next few weeks.
Brilliant. And Lynette, I want to just come to you for the final word regarding the social groups in Northern Ireland and Scotland. So people listening to this who think, hey, that sounds like good fun, I love a crossword. And we have had a lot of people get in touch with our shows saying, hey, I'd love to play a crossword again, you know, since losing my sight. This could be a great way of doing that, for example. I mean, I know it's one example, but, you know, it brings people in, doesn't it? How can people do that? How can they connect with you?
We have a Twitter account where you can get in touch with us, and we have a YouTube channel set up, so we have I forget the names of these things, Stephen. I should have it all memorized, but I don't, you know. And so I don't, but yeah, there's a Twitter group, and there's a YouTube channel, and of course we meet anybody in the Northern Ireland, and of course the Scotland area there, we meet every Thursday.
Is this through RNIB?
Yes, it is. It is through RNIB, but we, you know, it's through RNIB, but it's mostly, well, like, it's mostly run by us, like, you know,
we
sort of drive it, like, so it out there, you know, that sort of thing.
Yeah,
we're doing it under them, but kind of we're all people that want to get together to do this in the first place. And by the way, we have also done a podcast, so we have
a competition. Well, you know, it's funny. Every time someone tells me, I remember having a conversation with someone about podcasting, and they said, you know, oh, you're not starting another podcast, are you? And I thought, you know, no one's ever said that to a writer. No one's ever said, you know, there are loads of books. You don't need to do more books, you know. So I think more podcasts, the better. Lynn, Abby, Kim, thank you so much for your time today. And thanks for telling us about your experiences of accessible gaming.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, yeah, thank you.
You're very welcome, Stephen.
And coming up, we'll hear more visually impaired gamers share their stories. Sophie and Matt will join us here on Tech Talk a bit later. Now, though, based on your questions and queries to the RNIB Technology for Life helpline, Joanne Wilson's here to answer your queries around accessible televisions.
Hello, I'm Joanne from the Technology for Life team, and today I'm going to discuss accessible TV options. Lots of mainstream televisions out there have features and tools built into them which help to make these devices accessible for people who are blind or partially sighted. Samsung, LG and some other manufacturers include a built-in voice guidance feature on some of their latest digital televisions. Voice guidance works by announcing on-screen information like channel names, numbers, television guides, menus, upcoming and recorded programs, and various settings. In addition, some TVs from manufacturers like Sony, LG, and a range of others have the Android operating system pre-installed. These televisions include accessibility features like TalkBack for screen reader. The Android operating system also allows access to the smart features of a television, like catch-up and streaming services. And additional features may also include Alexa, Bixby, Google Assistant, and these can add the voice control element. These voice assistant options, if present, allow spoken commands such as "Hey Google, pause," "Hey Google, rewind," "Hey Google, fast forward 5 minutes," "Hey Google, next episode," "Hey Google, previous episode," or if you're using Alexa, "Alexa, lower the volume," "Alexa, volume up," "Alexa, mute, unmute," "Alexa, show me James Bond movies," "Alexa, search for comedies on Netflix." Separate add-on devices like Apple TV, Chromecast, and the Amazon Fire TV Stick also have accessibility tools built in, which enable access to video and on-demand services and TV catch-up apps. These devices do not show standard broadcast TV, and the accessibility on third-party apps can vary. In the instance of Apple TV, Apple TV was launched with VoiceOver, which is a screen reader, and it will announce particular information and elements on the screen. Siri is also present in later versions of Apple TV, so this then includes the voice control element of speaking into the device to give it commands. Apple TV enables access to video, on-demand services and TV catch-up apps, but it does not show standard broadcast TV. Amazon's Fire TV in the UK also has speech facilities included. Users can browse the Amazon catalogue, use the voice search function and view content. Third-party apps may not be supported though. Again, the Fire TV enables access to on-demand services and TV catch-up apps, but it does not show standard broadcast television. And recently, Sky Q updated the service they offer to include voice guidance for menus, settings information, and voice control to access programs and functions. They have also added the option of ordering an accessible remote control to improve user experience. Setting up accessibility features like voice guidance, talkback, voiceover. This can be done by going into the relevant menus of the television itself and making the required adjustments. Some television remotes will have a dedicated button for the accessibility settings, but it may not always be obvious or easy to navigate. And in some instances, sighted assistance may be required for that initial activation and configuration. I'd also like to mention audio description. Audio description is a free service. It describes body language, expressions and movements, and making the program clear through sound. Most major broadcasters, for example, like the BBC, Channel 4 and Sky, provide audio description on a certain percentage of their programs. I suppose one of the key points to take away is that not all televisions and devices will include all of these features. It is essential to talk with the seller or manufacturer of the devices to ascertain whether a particular model will have the features you require before purchasing one, or before activating some of the features in a device you may already have. There are many great options in terms of accessible TV and TV features out there. And more information is available from the RNIB Resource Hub under the Accessible Televisions section. Thank you for taking the time to listen today, and I hope you found this information useful and helpful. Thank you.
Thank you, Joanne. And if you want to get in touch with the Technology for Life team, get your tech questions answered, all you have to do is call the RNIB helpline on 0303 123 9999 or email the team directly, TFL, short for Technology for Life, at rnib.org.uk. Okay, time for this.
News from the internet.
Well, it was the time of the year for E3, all virtual, of course, this year. The Gaming Expo has happened, but any new accessible games on the horizon? Steve Saylor is a blind, prominent gamer in the visually impaired community, and he shared his thoughts with me.
Generally, this year's E3 was a little off in that it was an all-digital event, and there was a lot of different sort of live shows a lot of different live events that were happening. But as far as accessibility, there was only like three sort of standout moments of E3. There was the Summer Game Fest kickoff live, which was available in multiple different languages, as well as ASL and audio descriptions. And that was the same for Ubisoft Forward and the Xbox Bethesda Showcase. There was some accessibility in the live programming of E3. There was some captioning, but it just had kind of a bit of a different, some issues with that. I would say that there wasn't really a lot shown with accessibility in mind. I think we saw like maybe one or two games that talked about accessibility, but there are definitely still like games that I'm really excited to be able to play, and I have confidence that there are going to be some very accessible games. For instance, Far Cry 6 was shown off, and even though they didn't talk about it specifically, Ubisoft has been very well known for including a lot of accessibility in their games. So it's stuff like that I'm confident that they will have. But yeah, it was a mixed bag, and it's gotten better since last year, but not by much.
Okay, so a mixed bag of opinion there from Steve. Well, Courtney Craven is a deaf gamer. She is very excited about the events at E3. One particular game caught her attention.
probably the most exciting thing for me was a smaller one that people might have missed, but upcoming game Skateburb is about a skateboarding bird that's coming to console soon. Part of their E3 showcase highlighted accessibility. And I don't think that, at least this year, any other games have really discussed any inclusion or accessibility features that their game is going to have. So it was really nice to see an indie studio acknowledge how important it is and how important it is to them that their game is accessible to other people. But aside from that, seeing Ubisoft and Microsoft once again deliver their events with full captions and interpreters for sign language and audio description, I think we're going to see more and more of that in coming years for events like this. And it's exciting to get to see it, but it also really cements that the accessibility movement is not really a fad or catering to special needs, but it's here to stay. And if you want to stay current, you need to embrace it like a lot of other studios are.
Thanks to Courtney Craven and Steve Saylor for sharing their thoughts on E3. And it's very fitting, actually, to have that conversation, because this week we are talking all about gaming and indeed the challenges and the joy that gaming brings to many blind and low vision people. With me now to talk more about gaming from their perspective is Sophie and Matt. In fact, I'll let you guys introduce yourselves.
Hi, I'm Matthew Alcock, also known as the Wobbly Gamer, and I'm from Suffolk, and I live in a little town called Mildenhall in Suffolk.
Hi everyone, I'm Sophie, also known as Bird Nerd Sophie, and I live in Hertfordshire.
I'm loving the Twitter handles you guys have got, and these names are absolutely brilliant. Wobbly Gamer, is that because you've got nystagmus by any chance?
That is, yes.
I'm exactly the same. I've got the same condition. It was just, as soon as I heard it, it made me smile.
It kind of stemmed from my best friend, one of my best friends nicknamed me Wobbles, and it's just never kind of left. And I've grown up with it. It's still a part of what my friends call me. I get called it at work. So, yeah.
It's kind of a nice name in a way. I guess not at school. I guess it probably wasn't a huge amount of fun then.
No, I grew up with two older sisters, and my mum and dad were quite aware of the world, both work in care and stuff like that. And they said to my sisters, look, if you do it now, when he gets to school, he's not going to have any issues. So my sisters were kind of given a free rein to bully me. So by the time by the time I got to school, people would say something along the lines of, yeah, you've got four eyes, and I'd laugh at them and be like, is that all you've got?
Yeah, come on. There's some competition going on here. You can do better than that. Yeah,
I can't compete. Yeah, it worked. It worked for me really well.
What about you, Sophie? Any nicknames at school that you want to admit to?
Oh, I don't know. I don't think they're fit for radio. I think people can be quite cruel. I think Four Eyes is probably one of the nicer ones I got growing up, but you develop quite a thick skin over time. So in university, I got the name Bird Nerd because I am obsessed with birds. I have five parrots, so I'll stick with Bird Nerd for now on.
You've got five parrots?
Yeah.
Wow.
Chaos.
I can only imagine the chaos. Do they all talk all the time, or
they talk to each other? They talk to our home assistant. I'm not going to say her name because then she'll kick off. But they can say hello and hey and their own names and stuff. It's nice, but it's not nice at 6 a.m. when you want to have a lie in. They're having none of it.
No, it doesn't sound like it. No, that sounds like a lot of fun. Although I say that, it sounds like a lot of fun. I think if I lived with it, I might feel different. But yeah, okay. But look, that's a wonderful insight into your lives. Now, we're talking gaming, obviously, today. That's the whole purpose of this. Is gaming just to get away from the five parrots, or how did you get into it?
They actually really enjoy watching. They like, because their enclosures are quite near the television, so they like to look at the different colours and stuff. But I'd say I got into gaming when I was very little. My first favourite games were probably Sonic on the old Sega Mega Drive and Crash Bandicoot on the PlayStation 1. I just loved the colours and how kind of simple the graphics were. It wasn't too complex back then, so it's quite accessible for people who haven't necessarily got the best kind of visual acuity.
Yeah, that's a common thread I'm hearing a lot from people saying that, you know, the games of old were, you know, easier because they were slower. And and the thing about Sonic was it was quite fixed, wasn't it? Because Sonic was in the middle of the screen. So everything kind of centered around that one place. Your eyes didn't have to move around too much. That's, interesting. What's your eye condition, Sophie? How much can you see, if you don't mind me asking?
So I was born with cataracts, which I had removed when I was a baby. And since then, I've acquired many, many eye conditions. My current bugbear is called bullous keratopathy, where my cornea has very painful blisters on. And when they burst, then my vision kind of goes. It's incredibly painful. So sometimes I've got two eyes, sometimes I've got one. But I wear very, very thick glasses and my distance vision is very poor. So if I am ever gaming, I have to be very close to the television. There are certain settings that I need to make it a lot easier on myself. And also I don't have very good, like really close up vision either. I've kind of got like the distance between me and the laptop screen is okay. And then everything else is, it's a work in progress.
Right. Okay. Let me bring in you, Matthew, wobbly gamer that you are. So we know you've got nystagmus and that does have an impact on the amount of sight you have or the amount of sight that's available. It does depend though, I guess, on other factors, doesn't it? I mean, I know myself with optic nerve hypoplasia chucked in for the mix, as well as color blindness and photophobia and all the fun that comes with that. You know, your eye condition can be very different dependent on those conditions and what they are. So where are you in terms of your level of vision?
I've got quite good usable vision, but I was born with something called delayed visual maturation. I don't know, it's not commonly heard of. So I was actually born totally black blind. And as I got older, I was born paralyzed on my left-hand side and black blind. And as I got older, my senses kind of, I was delayed. So my senses kind of developed and my eyesight got better and better until it got to a point where they just said, look, it's as good as it's going to get. So go with it. Yeah.
Oh, I see. So you were born essentially with the eyes in the state that they would be in the womb, I guess, as they were forming. Yes, so it was actually forming as you grew up.
Yeah, my vision was forming as I grew up, yeah.
Wow.
So yeah, by the time I was 2, it was a meter bubble, and then it got better and better until I was about 10, maybe, and then it kind of stayed quite stagnant until I was 26, and then I'm starting to go through degression of sight.
And now it's going the other way.
Yeah, it's now going the other way. I was fully aware growing up it had happened, so it wasn't a surprise.
Right. Wow, that's an incredible situation to be in. I've never heard of that one.
It's a very unique situation. As you've said, I kind of get that from everyone I speak to about it, because it's kind of like, even in the eyes of the visually impaired world, it's not a normal story. So,
but it's your story, and
it's me. I've grown up with it, and it's part of my personality. It's part of me.
And you've got 2 sisters who can clearly take you on, so it's not a problem.
Yeah, no, that's not an issue at all.
So why gaming? What's great about gaming for you?
I hate to use the term, but it's an escape kind of thing for me. I've got quite a stressful job. I work in hospitality industry. I'm a manager in the hospitality industry, so it's very full on, a 24/7 job. And that time away, gaming is my time. My phone's not near me. It's just me and my friends gaming, basically. And it's a form of escapism. Yeah.
Do you find that as well, Sophie? Do you find it's good just to get away from it all with it?
Yeah, absolutely. It's just nice to just have something else to focus on. It's like sometimes a fantasy world, sometimes living vicariously through another character, and just takes you away from some of life's stresses and gives you video game stress instead.
Yeah.
I mean, I've been talking to lots of people about this and the gaming side of things. You know, we talked about getting into gaming, because I've never really been a gamer for lots of different reasons. I just didn't think my sight was up to it. The game I remember playing that I loved the most was Grand Theft Auto, from the one where it was top down, the aerial view one. I think was it PlayStation 2, maybe, that was on? I think
it'd be PlayStation 1 era was the top down ones.
Oh, was it 1? Right. Okay. Yeah. Goodness. Older than I thought. I'm older than I thought as well. thanks for that. But yeah, it was a great game. And I loved it because I think it was about exactly what you were saying there, Sophie, about Sonic. You know, it was in the middle of the screen. It was, you know, it was easy to focus on. Whereas nowadays, everything's coming at you from all over the place. These games are just wild in some cases. How do you both cope with games like that? Do you play games like that? Or do you tend to stick to... I don't want to say simpler games, but maybe easier games.
I'm the anomaly normally as well, because I tend to play the games which aren't best suited for visually impaired people. So I tend to play first-person shooters, so your Call of Duties, your Battlefields, the games that are very full-on, lots going on the screen. And that's, they're kind of my go-to alongside sports games. And again, they're quite, a lot's going on. You've got to try and concentrate on two or three things at once, which is never easy.
Sophie?
For me, I play a little bit of everything. I like the kind of first-person shooters, like Call of Duty and other games like Assassin's Creed, going back to like the Crash remakes and stuff. But I also play some kind of turn-based games, for example, Civilization V. That's probably my go-to game. And I think when one of my eye conditions, bullous keratopathy, was at its worst when it was first diagnosed, I actually spent a lot of time playing that game because it's not like fast paced. It's not, you've got to make quick decisions. You can go at your own pace. You can use screen magnifiers. You can use handheld magnifiers. You can change, you know, fonts and sizes and that kind of thing. And I think that makes a game like that, where there's not kind of time pressure and things coming at you at all angles, I think it makes it a lot more accessible for people maybe trying to start into gaming.
Yeah, that's the challenge, I think. Because I mean, and I wonder from both your points of view, because they, as we know, games have started to become more accessible. I mean, I think the biggest news story of 2020 was The Last of Us Part 2. When that game, it was announced that would have lots and lots of accessibility features in it for people with low vision. There was a huge celebration in the blind community. And I always remember the video of a YouTuber by the name of Steve Saylor, who cried on his YouTube video about it, and said, you know, I couldn't believe. And I remember many people in the mainstream community going, what's he crying over a game for? But, you know, this was huge, and it shouldn't be, but it was. And I just wonder from your points of view, you know, how much different would it make your experience to have those kind of controls inside Call of Duty, inside Assassin's Creed?
It would be huge. It would enable us to play at the same, because I know for a fact I'm not as good as my sighted friends on Call of Duty. And unfortunately, I won't be until they instigate settings like in The Last of Us 2.
And what would those settings need to be for you, do you think? What would you need in there?
For myself, it's things like larger HUD, so heads up display. So that's where all your information is, how much ammo is in your gun, your mini map, the text on the screen, the icons on the screen. It's things like that that I need to be a larger size for enable me to not take that 3 or 4 seconds longer to read what I'm doing or register what's going on in the game.
And Sophie, from your point of view, I mean, you play these games as well. I mean, is it the same for you? Would those kind of alterations, if that's the right word, would that help?
Yeah, absolutely. I definitely think coming down to the heads-up display, said already, I think that would be super important, as well as font choices, maybe a background to the font, they stick out more, font colours sometimes as well. And I just, while I'm not a video game developer, I just feel like they can create all these incredible gameplay experiences and graphics. Why can't they integrate more of these accessibility features into a wider variety of games?
Well, yeah, and the point is, it's not about you being a video game developer, is it? It's about you being someone who knows what you would need. And ideally, you want a developer to hear that and say, okay, look, that's something we can build in. And look, we have to be realistic, don't we? I mean, we know that games, it takes a long time to build these games. 5 years in some cases it can be before a new release will come out. So, you know, it's important that we have this conversation now, because then we can let the developers who are creating or starting the process of building these games in the future, you know, make them accessible. Either of you confident that that is the path we're on, or do you think The Last of Us Part 2 was a one-off?
Being on Twitter and following the people that are hugely involved in this, like you said, I'm a big fan of Steve Saylor, Ian Hamilton, the likes of them, there and campaigning and forcing these games companies to realize that accessibility shouldn't be an afterthought. The moment you start developing the game, you need to sit down and go, right, this is the game, this is the plan. And then when you first start making that game, you need to be sat down thinking about the accessibility options, thinking about how you can make it accessible for any disability. This isn't just visually impaired gamers, anyone with motor neurones disease, any kind of disability at all. They need to be developing games that can cater for everyone.
I completely agree. There's also another great YouTuber called James Roth, and he, I've seen him play Fortnite sometimes with their accessibility features. And, you know, I play, as I said, Assassin's Creed Valhalla myself, and I was kind of blown away that when we loaded up the game for the first time, before you do absolutely anything, it's, you know, they ask you straight away, what accessibility features do you want? Try this out, try this, try this. And to have that, you know, come up as the most important thing was just, I've never seen that in a game before.
There's also the other side of this, which is the consoles themselves. So if you think about PlayStation or Xbox, we're seeing more accessibility controls come in. And if I'm honest, when I heard about this at first, I thought, oh, that's great. The menus are accessible. I can, you know, peruse the store, as it were, but I actually can't really buy anything, or if I can buy it, I can't use it. And that's obviously a concern, isn't it? When you have a situation where a console is accessible, you can move around it accessibly, but you buy a game and it doesn't have those accessibility features in it. I mean, from your knowledge, Matthew, what's the number of games do you think out there that you would say are accessible? And obviously there's I guess two sides to that, isn't there? There's the games that you can just play, that, you know, by their nature, they're okay to play with low vision, and there's games that you need that accessibility in, which I imagine are, there's less of.
It's such a small number. As you said, The Last of Us 2 was the first one where I know that a non-sighted person has completed that game without without an amount of assistance. And that's just the first game I've ever heard of anyone being able to complete as a AAA title. So that's like a big launch. And for that game, that's now set a benchmark. And there's not many games that are anywhere near that benchmark. I know Gears of War, Microsoft are trying really hard with it. So are Ubisoft. There's a couple of big title companies out there that are trying to do it. And it's just trying to force through the things like the Gaming for R&IB campaign that we need to be doing, and people need to be backing to get these companies aware that there is a need and a want, because if there's this demand for it, they'll supply it.
You mentioned the R&IB campaign, and Sophie, I know that you and Matthew and everyone we've been talking to are really behind this, because it's pushing forward this message. Two key messages, I think, that are important. One is that blind and partially sighted people do play games. That it really happens. And that's an important message. That's a really important message, isn't it? That we've got to get out there to say to people, look, do you know what? It might seem ridiculous to some people, but it's not. It actually isn't. That, because not all of us, I tread carefully with this one, because I think blind people, someone who's totally blind, I would imagine would have difficulty with Call of Duty, even with adaptations. Would I be right or wrong in that?
You'd be right with that, yeah.
So I think there's a realistic sense that if you're blind, you may have some challenges. However, someone with low vision, well, that's a wide spectrum. You two are proof of that. I'm proof of that. We're all proof of it. So, you know, for that reason, with some accommodations, not too many, but some, or lots, or whatever, it is possible to do it, and that's an important message. But the other important message, of course, that R&IB are putting out is that the games themselves aren't accessible, and that's what we're talking about today. Which of those two do you want the community to hear most, or the world to hear most of?
Oh, it's a tricky one, really, because, I mean, for visually impaired and blind people, there's already so many stigmas, and to just... It's one of the things I do as part of my YouTube channel, as well as talking about parrots, is to, you know, show that we're kind of normal. Obviously, we're all a bit weird, but, you know, we're all kind of normal as well. And we like to do normal everyday-to-day stuff. And to show that, you know, we do love games can kind of go hand in hand with the fact that we want to tell these game developers, we want to buy your products, we want to play your games, please make them accessible for us.
It seems a shame that we have to really push that home, but we do, don't we, Matthew? I mean, that's the point. We really do have to say to people, we have money, like, to spend. We want to spend money, and we'll spend it on your product if you make it work for us.
Yeah, the amount of times that I've purchased a game, spent the 50, 60 quid, because it's not a cheap hobby.
No.
Mm-hmm. And then I've paid an hour and gone, actually, that game's just not going to work. Mm-hmm. And then it's sat back on the shelf, or I've gone into the game shop the next day and traded it in, and just never bothered with it again. And it's like Sophie said, it's erasing the stigma. There's not enough. Everyone, I tell people I'm a hotel manager that plays football and plays video game, and I'm visually impaired. And they look at me like I'm mad, because they hear the phrase visually impaired and they instantly think you're blind. And I'm like, no, I can still see. It's a spectrum. And it's like Sophie says, it's teaching people about there's the spectrum. Everyone's different. And gaming is exactly the same. Visually impaired gamers range from people that are blind or SSI to people like myself that have got quite good usable vision but need small amounts of help in game. And it's just making games companies aware that we need these changes, and it's only right that these options should be available to us.
I think the important thing is that it is such a spectrum, and I totally get that as well. You know, when I say what I do, I'm a YouTuber and I'm a bird trainer and I have parrots, but I'm also visually impaired, and people can't comprehend how those work. And then when you say you play video games or you go about your daily life, people just don't understand. And to normalize people of all abilities and all vision types can find enjoyment in these games, I think it's super important to just shout it out there. We want your products, make them accessible for us. And I really feel like it wouldn't take a huge amount of effort on their part to tweak certain things if they're already working on those programming. For example, the fonts or having a background to a font. If you can just give options, I think that that in itself would really open up video gaming to a lot of people.
Well, those are the views of Sophie and Matt, and indeed Lynette, Abby and Kim as well. We heard from earlier talking about their experiences of gaming. And it's a topic that we don't touch on a lot here on Tech Talk. It's not a topic we often get a huge amount of response about, which is part of the reason why we haven't covered as much of it over the years. And I think that is quite telling about the state of gaming as it is. I go back to my point earlier about blind people being able to probably play less than people who have low vision, and I think that probably still stands true. I don't actually think anymore it's something that's even just for younger people. I think that even that is going away because older people are starting to enjoy gaming more, and especially those, of course, who are growing up with it from an early age, as most of us now are. I'm probably the exception to that rule, and it's partly why I wanted to do this topic, because it's one area where I am completely out of my comfort zone. So I'm really glad we had the chance to talk about it this week on the show. I'll be really interested to hear your thoughts. If you want to jot them down, do send your thoughts about gaming in whatever form it may be. It doesn't have to be the latest console. It could be through your Amazon Echo even, or your Google Home, you know, whatever it is. Just get in touch and tell us how you game, if at all. You can, of course, get in touch with us. Email techtalk@rnib.org.uk. You can also find us at RNIB Radio on Twitter. You can follow me at Tech Talker Steve. And of course, we'll read out your emails next week. Tons of emails coming in over the back or off the back of a couple of shows recently. So we will get to those on next week's programme. I promise you that Emails Andy will be back with us next week, as will Robin, as will Tim. We'll all be back here on Tech Talk next week. I'll, of course, catch you then as well. Just a reminder, you can always download our podcasts. If you want to catch up with previous episodes, do that. All you've got to do is find RNIB Tech Talk, wherever you get your podcasts. And like I say, keep those comments coming. We'll read them out on next week's programme. Many thanks to Lynette, Abby, Kim, also to Sophie and Matt, Joanne Wilson from RNIB's Technology for Life team, Courtney Craven and Steve Saylor talking about E3, all our guests on the show this week. I'll catch you next time.